You've heard me talk about my dog Tucker a lot on this podcast, and it's hard to imagine our family now without the joy that this little field spaniel has brought to our daily lives. That's when we were approached about advertising Superfood Complete on the show, and I said, well, yes, of course. Actress Katherine Heigl has helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, and she is seeing more and more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Dogs across America, just like my dog Tucker, are trying Superfood Complete and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe and order right now to get up to 50% off your regularly priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com. That's BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe today. Today on the Zabecast, welp, it looks like Major League Baseball has signed their players up for the Bataan Death March. Only nobody's going to die. Will it even feel right, though, once it happens? Andy Poland joins me to help sort that out. Plus, the Redskins' name is under fire again, and a prototypical liberal fairy tale with a predictable ending. Your daily Kickstarter of Uncensored Me is locked and loaded, so buckle up and let's go! Monday, June 15th, 2020. Thank you for downloading. Hope you had a Cracker Jack weekend. I know I did myself. It was glorious weather here in the DMV. And I played golf on Sunday, which I'll tell you about in just a second. But first, as always, we ask our friend Grover. Grover, are we near or far from an agreement in baseball?
This is near. This is far.
All right, we'll sort that out with Andy. I think we're near far. We're far near. It's like they're not going to have an agreement, but they're going to play baseball, which is going to be super weird and kind of awkward, but oh well. At this point, that's all I can say. Oh well. Whatever, baseball. Do what you're going to do. So I got the treat to play golf with a Hall of Fame caliber hockey player. I don't know if he is in the actual Hall of Fame. He was the Capitals all-time leading scorer for many years until Alex Ovechkin surpassed him. He is the great Peter Bondra, who is an even better dude, just a great guy, easygoing, loves the game of golf, and had a wonderful time playing golf with him at my buddy Ron Thomas's club called the Cannon Club, where we held our golf show, the Capital Golf Gang, on Sunday morning. And it was just a great day all around. The weather was fantastic. The show went well. And I got to fire off a cannon. I'm going to post a video of that shortly here. And I got a free shirt and a free round of golf, which was great. The only thing was that my wrist, because you remember, well, I don't know if I talked about it on the podcast. I talked about it on my 980 show. Thursday night was a very, very, very bad night for me. I was in such pain. The tendonitis in my left wrist exploded because of my rheumatoid arthritis and also just basically inflammation in my body from a terrible, terrible diet. Way too many Diet Cokes, way too much sugar, way too many carbohydrates, processed foods, refined, you know, breads and flours and all that stuff that I know is bad for me. And it made it so that my left wrist was so painful that I was up at the middle of the night for 2 hours trying to figure out how do I get this thing so I can at least fall asleep for a few hours and get up and do the show. I was icing it. I took, you know, Tylenol on top of Aleve, which I didn't know if I could do or not safely. So I'm Googling with one hand in a haze on Thursday night. It was that bad. Well, as my nutritionist, Dr. Hillary, says, and she's not a doctor, but I call her a doctor anyway, she said very pithily in a text as I sent her, she goes, pain is a great motivator. And so I vowed after that night, I said, I am never going back to that night again, period. And so I think Friday I did cheat a little bit. after I finally woke up from a monster nap. But Saturday morning, I woke up and I said, not having Diet Coke today. And I'm not having Diet Coke tomorrow. I've gone 2 days. 2 days. Congratulations. Thank you. Good job by me. 2 days without any Diet Coke. But Saturday, I really ate very clean and minimally and felt a lot better. So Sunday morning, I woke up and I felt a lot better in every regard. Pretty much all my joints, everything but my left wrist, the tendonitis in my left wrist, for the last, say, 10% of motion with a full golf swing, still, it's like, you know, I'd be like, okay, I could got this, grip is fine, feels good, and So basically trying to hold the angle coming through and then on release was when the pain was. So we do our show, and we just go rush to the first tee. No warm-ups, no nothing. And I'm like, oh boy, this is going to be bad. And I end up just sort of painfully plinking it and bunting it around and hitting all kinds of awful shots. And Peter Bondra is such a good dude that he's rooting for all my shots. And he's trying to find something positive. Like, oh, no, that'll be okay. Oh, yeah, no, okay, that'll be fine. Okay, yeah, that's good. That kind of stuff. Because he's a great dude. And I felt bad because I was like, I felt like saying, you don't have to root for these shots. Like, I'm just happy I'm out here on a glorious day getting to play with you and talk hockey and golf and everything else. And the difference between Slovakia now and Czech Republic, because remember the two split. I'm like, you don't have to root for my shots because these are not even my shots. Like, I'm not saying I'm a good golfer, but this is not even my game. I'm snipe hooking 180 yard three woods because that's all I can stand to hit. And it's like, ow. I mean, I hit a few good shots, but the camaraderie was nice and it was a good time. Ron is very proud of his club and he should be. It's an outstanding golf course, but he's even more proud of the people that are there. The members there, he says, and I believe are very unpretentious, even though a number of them are very successful and have a shit ton of money. One guy I met afterwards, Steve Keithley, Keithley, K-E-I-T-H-L-E-Y. He calls him over, Ron does. He's like, I want you to meet this guy. I'm like, okay. And he looks like just a regular 60, early 60s dude. He doesn't look like Rambo or anything. And basically Ron said, yeah, Steve here likes to hunt with our buddy Dave Adams. And I'm like, yeah, like, what do you mean hunting? He goes, bow hunting. I said, really? What do you hunt? And he says, everything. And I'm like, tell me more. So he talked about going on some trip to Kansas for whitetail deer. And I said, "What? Why would you go to Kansas for whitetail? We got whitetail deer overrunning the greater DMV. Many areas in the country have so many whitetail deer, you can't get rid of them all." He said, because they got monster ones in Kansas. And I'm like, okay. And I said, it's all bow hunting, huh? No gun? He's like, nah. Compound bow mostly. I'm trying to get back into traditional bow, but it's compound bow only. And I said, what's the range on that? 50 yards? He said, I like to stay 30 yards or so. It was at that point that he says to me, here, you want to see a picture of the grizzly bear that I got while stalking with a bow? I go, what? Sure enough, unbelievable, massive grizzly bear. He's posing with it. He's got his compound bow. And he killed it with a bow and arrow. And I said, where do you shoot at a grizzly bear with a bow? Knowing that if you miss, if you graze it, if you hit the bear in the wrong spot, it could be good night for you. He said, you want to get it through both lungs. And I go, really? So you got to be that good of a shot. He goes, yeah, ideally you want to get it there because that'll take it down pretty quick before it can charge you. And I said, okay. I said, what if you don't get it? What if you only get it through one lung or you nick its lung or whatever, or he moves at the last second? That's when Steve says to me, well, there is somebody that has to back you up with a 300 Magnum just in case. And I then gave it to him. I just met this guy. And I then start giving him shit. I'm like, oh, well, okay. Like, that's really stalking a grizzly bear on foot with a bow and arrow. Well, okay, whatever. Yeah, I'm going to shoot this grizzly bear. And if I miss, well, then bam, 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 the guy behind me will take him down with a 300 Magnum. But, of course, I was kidding. And we had a good laugh about it because he was a totally cool dude and very unpretentious. He also apparently was part of a group of people who sued BlackBerry for patent infringement on their email system, and they ended up winning a shitload of money. But he was just the most regular, great dude, and you wouldn't have known it just from meeting him. But I almost think that I should get Steve on the podcast to talk about hunting, you know, bow hunting big animal. He has a picture of a bison as well. Fucking bow hunting. Huge animals. I'm like, that's crazy. I asked, do you ever hunt with anything but bow and arrow? He goes, nah, at this point, not really. I said, why? Does it make you feel like guns are unfair? He goes, it's not that it's unfair, that it's unsatisfying, he said. Anyhow, he is a official measurer for Boone and Crockett, Pope and Young, Buck, Bears, and Stags. All these organizations, magazines, websites, whatever. If you bag something big, Bucks, Bears, or Stags in the greater Maryland area, Steve Keithley, the guy to meet. The guy that's going to judge your kill and say, look at the horn structure on that. Look at the antlers. Anyway, it was a great time playing golf. I could barely knock it around like I normally did, but I'm very encouraged because 2 days clean living, 2 days no Diet Coke. Most of my body feels a lot better, remarkably, right away. Left wrist is going to get there eventually fully. Just give it a little time here. I'm in. I'm all in for this. It's all good. All right, let's talk to our man, Andy Poland. It's been quite some time. All right, it has been too long since we stopped in with Uncle Andy. Not out of any malice, not out of poor performance here on the Zabecast, just a matter of minutes because, you know, we're starting to add more and more people into the mix. Hope he's not going to be mad about this. Hello, Andy.
You know, I was starting to feel like one of those people in the nursing home, like nobody was coming to visit.
I apologize. You know, it's been so dry sports-wise, and I know you can talk about many other things than sports, but I kind of have, like, your role on the team here, your role on the Zabecast team is definitely solid sports, and so as it got super dry, I said, ah, fuck it. I'll get back to Andy when something happens. And it's been 2 weeks, I think. I missed you this past week. But it's been 2 weeks of baseball dicking back and forth with each other, and we still don't have a deal.
Yeah. You know, I've been I covered extensively in 1990, that lockout. I remember 1981. We all remember, you know, 94, and we didn't have a World Series. This is kind of what they do. And everybody says, well, that's it. I'm never watching a game again. The hell with both of them. And they come back. So,
in fact, I think the last time I talked to you, you said, oh, no, they're close. Don't worry. And that was 2 weeks ago. That was 2 weeks ago. They're close. Don't worry. Literally, let me just get people up to speed here. So I went out. I drove an hour and a half to Ron Thomas's golf club today. Did the golf show in the morning, played golf with Peter Bonger, which was a wonderful treat, and former Capital Hall of Fame caliber. I don't know if he's in the Hall of Fame. Drove home, took a nap to golf on TV. And by the way, Andy, golf has never been more nappable now that there's no fans. It's glorious for us middle-aged men. And then I just sat down, plugged in the recorder, and started talking to you. I didn't check Twitter all day. Does baseball have a deal? What did I miss? Did I miss anything?
We're going to have the commissioner tomorrow is going to implement a 50-something game season.
He's going to implement. Because the last I read, I think, on Saturday morning was the Players Association said, well, if you're going to force us, better tell us by Monday by 6 o'clock. Plus, we got a lot of other questions. It was a very harumphy stance, and essentially they don't have a deal. They're just going to surrender and be bitches about it, I guess.
Well, look, the owners keep coming back to slicing off part of the per game. you know, that they would have 75%, 80%. And that's going to be a non-starter for the players because that's revenue sharing, which they're not going to do. The other thing that developed this weekend, which is a really bad look for the owners, is it's been reported that they have a $1 billion extension with TNT to do playoffs.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah. So, you know, and that's it's unlike the other sports where you have revenue sharing. That would be good for the players, but they don't share that revenue. So they're saying to the players, we're broke. Sorry, we can't afford to pay you. We're going to lose $640,000 for every game we play. So these are the number of games we can play. Or if you want to play more, we're going to slice you per game. And the players, I think smartly, because the new collective bargaining agreement, as you know, is coming up after next season. They're saying, no, we're not going to introduce that virus into the system. That's not going to happen.
It sounds like the players can claim a win by refusing to agree because they're going to get essentially the same amount of money anyway.
Yeah, I mean, because the owners are going to make their money with extended playoffs. Now, they won't have that because as part of this, you know, system that they can put in, they don't have the agreement with the players to go from 10 to 14 or as many as 16 postseason teams.
Right.
So, you know, the owners are not going to lose their teams over this. And no. I think Tom Ricketts said something like, you know, this is a low income business. Bull.
Right. You know. These owners, I don't know if we had this discussion, you and I, but I talked about it. As I looked up the Wikipedia chart of every team and every owner, I quickly realized how few of the owners in baseball, other than the top seven or eight, I actually knew.
Yeah.
Unlike the NFL, I can go. Can you name every NFL owner by team?
I don't think so. But I bet
you could.
Half of them.
I bet you could name almost all of them. Baseball, it's really hard once you get past the usual families. And as somebody put it, I think, succinctly in a tweet this weekend, they said, look here, owners, you didn't buy a fucking hedge fund, you bought a baseball team. Stop acting like this is all just a financial leverage transaction. But apparently, they don't care, Andy. They don't give a shit, the owners.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you know, and this has to do with bad blood with the players going back 50 years. You know, the owners prior to 1976, when they had free agency, they had it over the players. I mean, the players were indentured servants, basically.
True. Right.
To them. And so the tables turned and they've been getting their ass kicked for, you know, 50 years now. And they're saying, wait a minute, we're the owners and they're the players and they're killing us.
It's almost like when Jerry Richardson said infamously in that meeting with the players before the brief lockout almost 10 years ago now, we're going to take our fucking league back. Is that what, didn't he say that to Peyton Manning?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to take our fucking league back. And sure enough, they did. I'm sure baseball wants to do the same thing. Now, there was relative labor peace for a long time. There was renewals of the CBA that went quietly months ahead of time.
Right. They were able to pull that off. I think they've got a very weak union leader now in Tony Clark.
Yeah.
I think going with a former player was a mistake. I mean, Don Fehr worked under Marvin Miller, and I spent a lot of time with Don Fehr during that 1990 lockout. He didn't even like baseball. He was just a strict labor guy.
Right.
You know, and don't sell me the romance of the game, okay? Here's the deal. Here's what the revenue should be. Here's what the split should be. And they got it done. And he didn't blink.
Marvin Miller was a stone-cold pirate who blazed the path and told these players, you're getting fucked royally. You need to stand tall. And they did over a series of strikes in the early 80s that finally got the owners to back off a bit. But Fehr, even though he looked like a lip gloss wearing fucking Muppet, he was a cutthroat as well.
Yeah,
and so the two of them were cutthroats. Tony Clark is a former player, and I just don't think he has the same sort of edge that the previous guys had.
Yeah, and I don't think he's got the respect of the owners the way that, you know, Fehr and his group did. I remember during the lockout that the players were starting to weaken a little bit, and Fehr brought in Marvin Miller to address the troops. Like,
right.
Sit down, shut up, and learn something from how we got here. You guys like making $1 million a year? Well, you used to make a top salary of $100,000. So sit and listen. And they didn't cave. And the owners finally did. They finally did cave. And that was really the ouster of Faye Vincent and the rise of Bud Selig.
Is it possible that, you know, if you've got a bunch of guys, the majority of the owners, save for a handful, that are just cutthroat financiers who really don't give a fuck about the game, shouldn't the players have another Don Fehr instead of a former player? Because I'm sure Tony Clark loves the game and breathes the game because he played the game, right? You need mm-hmm. another Don Fehr who's just a labor cocksucker who doesn't really care about the game. He's there right. to beat the owners at the negotiating table.
100%. Yeah. And the football has gotten closer to that with Damaris Smith, who's an attorney, not a former player, but the structure of football is so different that he really can't be as powerful as a baseball guy could be.
Well, when it's all said and done, forced march or not, will it suck? Will it be great, meh, or suck this super short August, September baseball season?
I feel like if I'm watching a game in the middle of August and we're like 3 weeks into this, I think people are going to say, it's not what it was, but this is good. And I think people will forget about it. I mean, that's kind of what happens all the time with these labor stoppages, that the teams get back on the field, people forget about the past and they move on.
I think that's true about a lot of things in life, Andy, whether they're personal slights or larger things or big issues. It's like, people get over it. The river of life flows on, you know, whether you want it to or not. Nobody can stay mad or hold on principle forever. It gives at some point.
Yeah, if you're watching Max Scherzer and he's sitting on 17 strikeouts, are you thinking, this is really good, but it would be a lot better if we had a 70-game season? No.
Your buddy texts you, dude, Mad Max is sitting on 17 strikeouts. He's got a one-hitter. This game is on tilt. You got to check it out. Yeah, no, I can't. I took a stance after what baseball did. I'm not going to watch him anymore.
Right.
Meanwhile, in the NBA, just when we thought we had an ironclad plan to get back, here comes Kyrie Irving. Wow. The flat earth idiot who's been a cancer on now two different teams. He may kill the league if he doesn't come to realize this is a stupid stance to take. Do you think the NBA is going to settle down and say, okay, we probably should collect our money and we can still exercise our social justice conscience and actually have a bigger stage if we play than versus if we don't play?
Well, Kyrie Irving's not playing anyway, right? He's got a shoulder surgery that's keeping him out, so he's not going to be back on the court anyway.
Right, but
so
he's agitating to the fellow players.
Yeah.
We shouldn't – he said something smells fishy. I don't like this because he doesn't want the moment to pass.
Right, but also if you want to make your social justice stand known – seems to me you have a much better chance of doing that if you're actually playing. I mean,
think?
Yeah.
And given that Adam Silver has been the most permissive of commissioners for his players to make stances and to have messages on shirts and bandanas, that he will, I'm sure Adam Silver will let them protest appropriately when they come back.
Tommy Smith, John Carlos, medal stand, Olympics 1968, raised fist. If they do that on the medal stand, don't you think that's a little more impactful than if they did it on the street corner of, say, like Chicago?
Probably, yeah. Probably. Yeah. All right, so just because, again, I kind of unplugged this week and it was glorious, what's the latest on the NBA? Has anything moved, settled down? What's the story?
Well, I mean, Austin Rivers, and I don't know him other than I've heard him interviewed a couple of times. I have met his father several times, very impressed by Doc Rivers.
Yes.
He said what we're saying, that if you want your stand to be known, get on the court and play.
Yeah.
And here's my feeling of this. The bus is being driven by LeBron. LeBron wants to play. They want to play. There's no other league where the top superstar can call all the shots. And I think that, you know, Michael Jordan could have done this in his day, and LeBron can do it now. And if LeBron wants to play, they're going to play.
And then the Wizards, should John Wall play? He said he's not gonna.
You know, we're driven by the search for better. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't help you just hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. This according to a recent Indeed survey. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Zabe. Just go to Indeed.com/Zabe right now and support the show by saying you heard about it right here on this podcast. Indeed.com/Zabe. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Well, you know why, don't you?
No.
The Buckhantz told us this months ago. The Wizards have an insurance policy. If John Wall doesn't take the court this year, they collect 80% of his salary. If he steps on the court for one game, they don't get it.
No way for this year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They took out an insurance policy. So, there's no way he's playing. He says he's 110%, but he's not going to play.
Is that insurance policy being openly talked about, or is that a Buckhantz insider-type deal?
I haven't heard it anywhere else besides Buckhantz, but
So it's not being talked about publicly. That's interesting that it wouldn't get out. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying it makes perfect sense. I'm just wondering why everyone's been so tight-lipped about it.
Yeah, I imagine it's the same thing with Kevin Durant, because Durant quickly came out and said, oh, no, I'm not playing.
And I wonder if you could be hit with insurance fraud if you come out and say, huh, I could definitely play, but I want to collect 80% due to our insurance policy. Wouldn't the insurance policy lawyers go, let's call our lawyers on this?
I don't know if then you get into the fine print. Is there any obligation to play if you are cleared? That's the question.
Fine print on an insurance contract. What a wonderful land that is, huh, Andy? Heretofore, notwithstanding parties counter enjoined to agree upon good faith, blah, 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 blah.
Mel Kiper has, I don't know whether he still does it, but at one time he was a consultant for Lloyd's of London.
Really?
And they would ask him, such and such a player, they take out insurance policies while they're still in college. So if this player is going to be projected in your mock draft in the second round, how much money would he make over the course of his career? And Mel said the way it would work is if you suffered an injury in college, let's say, and you could never play a snap in the NFL, you would collect the money. But if you suffered that injury in college, say it knocked out your senior year, and you went to a tryout in the NFL and you went to a practice, boom, you get none of the money.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I believe that Anthony Kim, former top five golfer in the world and one-time Ryder Cup star, who has basically fallen off the face of the earth, nobody even sees him anymore, anywhere, apparently had an insurance policy after he injured his wrist that many speculate he's cashed in on, because they said if he enters one pro tournament, doesn't matter what he does, that's it. The insurance policy is null and void.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Wasn't it true with Lloyd's of London that once upon a time, Lloyd's of London insured Mary Hart's legs, the television host for Entertainment Tonight? She had these amazing long gams. Right. Did you ever hear that rumor?
I heard that, but it would seem to be a pretty safe bet, if you want to call it that, on the part of Lloyd's of London, because what are the odds of her legs being chopped off?
I don't know. The premium would be very low. I imagine it's like, oh, $49.95 a month. No problem. We're good. Yeah. You're insured for $10 million if she has to be a paraplegic. Right.
I mean, if she sprains her ankle, it doesn't mean she can't work anymore.
But that, again, Andy, that's why they have insurance for shit you can't see coming. If the legs, like, they couldn't put Mary Hart as Stumpy behind a desk. Sorry, that's so wrong. They couldn't put her behind a desk with a skirt and be like, yeah, this is the same as it was. Mary Hart, we went to Entertainment Tonight, this big Lucite news table.
Right.
And underneath where you could just see those legs gently crossed.
Yeah.
You're like, what is she saying? I don't know. I'm looking at her legs.
She's a big Dodger fan. You ever see her sitting behind the plate? She's got seats. Larry King is there sometimes.
No, I did not. How is Mary Hart holding up as she advances into her age 60-something season?
Yeah, she's hanging in there.
Not terrible, right? Not terrible. How are you hanging in your age 62 season, Andy?
I'll be 62 in August, and I'm doing fine. I had a good, nice bike ride yesterday, and I got good genetics.
Good, you are. Well, but you live a good, clean, simple life, and you avoid the kind of things that, you know, wreck people's lives, and that's a good thing. Mary Hart is 69, Andy.
Wow. Yeah.
69, and she's holding up well, given that she doesn't have a lot of overt plastic surgery.
Right. She's been off the air for a while now, right? Maybe 10 years?
Mary Hart retires from Entertainment Tonight. Headline click. Come on. 2011. Andy fucking Poland with the dates.
9 years. I was off by 8 years. Close.
Do you know that she once dated Andy Warhol?
Really? That must have been odd.
Or wait a minute. Did she date him? I'm looking at this picture just popped up on my New York Times link. Yeah. Mary Hart and Andy Warhol in 1985.
Wow. He was weird. Very weird guy.
Absolutely. Okay. The Redskins name is back in the crosshairs.
This is odd.
It's not odd to me. I said a while ago, after it seems like the battle had been won with the Washington Post survey that showed an overwhelming number of Native Americans either liked it or didn't mind. I said, the battle's not over. The forces that want the name gone are going to retreat up to the hills, sort of like a guerrilla force, and they will be back at the appropriate time. And now they're back, given the current events, and you've got guys pushing hard for it. Why do you think it's odd?
Well, in that Muriel Bowser at the Welcome Home Luncheon made this big plea for the Redskins to come back to Washington. She didn't say, as long as you change your name. Now, she's emboldened by the forehand slam she just delivered to the president by painting Black Lives Matter across his front doorstep there.
Right.
And so maybe she feels like that. But I was told that Jack Evans, who's no longer on the city council, had to resign in shame, was able to convince her, look, let's get the Redskins back. The name thing will take care of itself. Shut up about the name, which she did for a long time. And now she seizes an opportunity maybe there is a possibility that the Redskins are going to come back. It seems like they've been, turned away by Virginia and Maryland. So maybe she knows that Washington is their only option, and she's taking advantage of the current events, as you say, to play this card. I don't know.
It's
very strange.
The mayor was on our station with Doc and Galdi and said flat out, I think it's time to change the name, one that we can all be proud of. She said it's a problem from a stadium standpoint, both in the district with her constituents and, she claimed, with the federal government that owns the land.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that. I mean, to me, the Washington Post poll, which is now 5 years, it was a game changer. Out of 10.
It should have been a game changer. But again, my feeling is, and just for the record, Andy is okay with the name sunsetting, right?
I would be okay with it, but I was in favor of it sunsetting until the Washington Post poll came out, and I said, okay, well, it doesn't seem to be a hot button issue for the people right. It matters most to.
Yeah, my stance is that things can't suddenly be racist. Either they are or they aren't, and you're making an argument that is based on shifting sort of tonality in the country that is only tangential to the name itself. Because if you know the history of the name, and you do, Andy, it mm-hmm. is not one that was just like, ah, ha, ha, yeah, let's call them Redskins. That'll serve them right. It's not that way. It was born of a different time, and the peoples that consider themselves Native Americans and or Redskins have never thought of it on large. Not every single one, but I'd say, like the Post poll said, 70, 80, 90%, they've not thought of it as a slur.
Yeah, I think it was a result of stationery, if you want my opinion.
Do tell.
The team debuted as the Boston Braves in 1932, and they played in the same stadium that the Boston Braves baseball team did, and there was confusion, and they needed to differentiate themselves. So I believe they had a lot of stationery printed up with an Indian head on it for Braves. So rather than throw out all this old stationery and change the whatever logo they had, we'd go with Redskins. Close enough.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Well, you know what? That could be a theory right there. From a district standpoint, if you want the team and you want the stadium in the district, which I think would be smart for the mm-hmm. district, there's a lot of sense in the strategy that you kind of outlined with Jack Evans no longer there. Look, get the team and the stadium first. That'll be permanent. The name will eventually fall if you just let it hang in there long enough. Like, that's the most important thing. Get the stadium, get the team, and then let things take their course.
No, I agree. And I think that Evans had a sound strategy. And you didn't hear a peep out of Bowser about the name until this past week from that period of time.
Yeah. I know. I hope though, because you and I both want the team and the stadium in the district.
Absolutely.
It needs to be there. It's like the rug and the Big Lebowski, Andy. It what? Ties the room together, right?
Well, right?
Doesn't the team tie our vast, sprawling metropolis together if it's in D.C.? I think it does.
Well, and also the way that people now have gotten used to not going to games, if you want them to come, are you going to ask them to schlep out to Loudoun County? I don't think so.
I hate Loudoun County. Wait a minute. I live in Loudoun County.
Yeah.
No, that's Loudoun is out, basically. It would be that awful site south of the Beltway, that mystery site, or shutter, God forbid, rebuild in Raljohn.
Which seems most likely at this point.
Oh, my God.
No. That's where they are. I mean, I think that Snyder wants to build something similar to what they have in Foxborough. Of course, usually it takes a team that goes to a bunch of Super Bowls to make that popular. But
exactly. Oh my God! You know, we've known you and I that they were going to need a new stadium probably as early as 2002.
Oh, from the FedEx Field.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
At least, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It was bad from the beginning. It was thrown up by Jack Kent Cooke.
In a hurry.
He was gonna die, and it was supposed to be a 36-month project. He put it up in 18 months.
Yeah.
In a bad place.
So all the hours you and I spent over our 16 years on the air talking about the stadium and this, that, and the other, I would have never believed that we're sitting here on the verge of a possibility. It's not yet a done deal, but just a possibility that they rebuild in the same fucking shitty location, Raljohn, Maryland. You got to be kidding me. Like, this is insane that this could happen.
But I also remember you sitting in the studio and saying, we're 10 years away from blackouts. And I said, come on. They say they got a 200,000 seat waiting list.
And it was five years. And the only reason it didn't happen was because the NFL quickly got rid of blackouts. They were this is going to look bad. So, yeah.
Yeah, they had to. Yeah. I mean, it's one thing if it's Tampa and Jacksonville being blacked out. It's another if it's major cities. You can't have it.
All right. DC Sports Hall of Fame, Andy, I need you to weigh in on this. The latest class has been announced, and there's been a list of people who are curiously not yet in this austere hall. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm not on that committee. I'd like to be. I know some of the names.
You deserve to be.
Yeah, I don't know. I've talked to people, but nobody's invited me to do it. Gary Clark is going in. That's good.
Okay.
You know, Ken Beatrice, I think, deserves to go in for, you know, a variety of reasons. But yeah, I mean, it's odd the way they do it. I am on other Hall of Fame committees, and it's sort of like when a name bubbles up, and it's not really a real organized process. So some of these names have been overlooked. And, you know, I mean, there really is no Hall of Fame other than like a big poster in the outfield at Nats Park, right? I mean, there's
where is the physical hall?
There isn't one. That's the thing.
Really?
Yeah. So they have a day, they get introduced, and, you know, they wave to the crowd, and their names appear somewhere in Nats Park. That's it.
Steve Buck, media members that are in include Steve Buckhance. Ken mm-hmm. Beatrice goes in posthumously. For those that don't know, my listeners in Wisconsin and elsewhere, Ken Beatrice was the original sports radio host of record here in D.C. and a guy who was fantastic at taking a tiny grain of sports truth and blowing it up, Andy, into a full-fledged lie.
Yeah.
About scouts that he had that he didn't have, about players that he had seen that he didn't know, and on and on.
Yeah, I mean, he makes Donald Trump look like I don't know what. Like,
you know what, though? His act was a lot like Francesa's.
Yeah, yeah.
It was. Supreme, I mean, like, confidence. Not in the belittling way that Francesa gets, but Ken was more gentle in it, but he wanted you to know, he had to have you know, he needed you to know, he knew everything. He was right. God of sports knowledge, and you couldn't check him in the 80s because there was no internet.
Well, you got to realize how different the business was. The business now is about opinions because everybody has access to the same resources that you do. And so he would set himself up as the know-it-all, and I watched him do this. This is one of his big lies. If I'm reading something, I'll tell you. But somebody would call up, let's say, a question about Troy Aikman. And he'd start to answer about Troy Aikman while he sifted through his roster until he found the Cowboys one. And he would begin to read you heights and weights of the linemen. While you're driving along and, you know, you're looking at traffic, you're thinking about what you're supposed to pick up on your way home from work, you're not really focusing on that. So all you're hearing are heights and weights. You're thinking, Jesus, this guy knows everything. He's 6'2.5" and 335 1/4" And you go, wow, how does he know that? Well, he's reading it.
You know, Marty Aronoff is in. He's a stats guy.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
All he did is stats for team. Phil Hochberg, my buddy, the PA announcer for various teams, is in the Hall of Fame. Look, Andy, you deserve in on this Hall of Fame, and I'd say – I ought to have an outside shot. 20 years in afternoon drive on sports radio. Shouldn't that be equal to or more than a fucking PA announcer?
Easy.
Pardon my French, for God's sakes, but seriously.
I know Phil, and Phil did it for a long, long time. So okay. I'm not looking to get in the Hall of Fame. I just want to be
on the committee. Well, yeah. I'm just saying it wouldn't be out of the realm for me to say that you actually deserve to be on there.
Well, thank you. I don't know where that'll happen, but that's nice of you to say that.
Of course, you don't really – I don't know if you get anything. I don't know if you get a discount at Starbucks. I don't know if there's a bus that you get. It just sounds like a dinner that I'd have to attend that I'd want to back out of. So
it's not a dinner. No, you just go to a game, except they might – they might make you stay till the seventh inning stretch when they introduce you.
You know what, Andy?
Too long for you.
If that's it, I'm out. Never mind. I don't want to be in your silly Hall of Fame. All right, Andy. Glad you're riding your bike. Today was glorious. 68 for a high on a June Sunday in the nation's capital. God,
great
was
weekend.
It nice. Great weekend. All right, buddy. Let's hope everything gets spun up here soon. We're dying without sports. We'll talk next week. Thanks, bud.
Take care. Bye.
Let's end on this. John Hinderaker, writes for the powerlineblog.com, has a story that's titled, A Fantasy with a Predictable Ending. In Minneapolis, activists were all a flutter, and they were like, yay, we're doing good. Why? Because in the wake of all the violence and the protests and the riots, it was all mixed together. Legit protests, violence, yes, and rioting and burning shit down. They volunteers had turned a former Sheraton hotel into a sanctuary for the homeless. Can I get a collective? Aww. They were really proud of it, and they were saying things like this to the paper. This is not temporary. We're going to make this permanent. It's a revolutionary model, said one of the volunteers. And they said, we're going to find a way to make it work. We're going to help, you know, solve the problem of the unhoused with this former Sheraton hotel that has been shut down during the riots, and we're going to make it permanent somehow. We don't really know or who's going to pay for it, but again, oh, we're giving them a place to live. Well, fast forward to about 2 weeks is all it took. And by the way, the owner of the hotel, Jay Patel, said he was okay with it. He didn't want to be the guy that says, what, bunch of homeless in my hotel? Fuck that. Get out of here. He went along with it. He's like, hey, okay, you know what? Look, let's work on something. Let's try to find a mod. I don't know what would work. I mean, they're homeless. How are they going to pay rent? What traveler is going to pay money, even the cheapest rate you can offer? Is the Sheraton Corporation going to say, oh, yeah, you want to have the first couple floors homeless people? Yeah, it's fine. Still a Sheraton. Still get the free soap and the free pancakes in the morning or whatever. Well, it took like 2 weeks. And guess what? No. Don't guess. Oh, wait. You already know? You already know the ending of this? What, did you read the story? Oh, no, you didn't read the story. You just used your brain, huh? The place quickly became a shithole. And it quickly became a place of misery and a place of drug use and a place where somebody died of an overdose. At that point, the owner said, yeah, okay. Guess what? We're going to have to shut this down. It lasted like 2 weeks. All the TVs apparently were stolen. The hallways were completely trashed. According to one volunteer, it started out well, then descended into chaos. People got the message that this was a place where they could use drugs freely, and that attracted the wrong crowd. It was a wonderful intention, but it had no shot of solving the homeless problem in Minneapolis, even a small slice of it. It wasn't a long-term solution to the homeless problem, and it wasn't even a short-term solution. It was just a nice idea, a fantasy, a wish. And instead of being undaunted by this, I imagine that people are going to just keep trying shit like this. People that want to believe in these sort of magical things. Homelessness is a complicated, vexing problem that overlaps with mental disease, drug addiction, social ostracization, families that just don't want anything to do with people, you know, who are homeless. Businesses that don't want them hanging around because it's bad for business. It's a complicated problem. Can you spend money, tax money, to build shelters, homeless shelters? We do already. And we want to try to get them in there, but you can't let the homeless shelters then turn into drug dens. Because then, as the volunteer admitted, it started out wonderfully, but then quickly descended into chaos. Oh, well. At least they tried. Can we get them a t-shirt for that? At least they tried. That's a wrap for today. Thank you very much for downloading. Keep your head up amongst all the madness. Live your life fully, as I will try to do myself, and we will carry on, people. Don't forget, we've changed to Red Circle, so if you get a chance and you subscribe to Fridays, please cancel Libsyn. Go over to Red Circle. We're going to close Libsyn entirely by the end of the month, so I think if you don't do anything, it'll automatically close out, but I don't know that for sure. If you have any problems, please email me, zabe@yahoo.com. We'll get you untangled, chop chop, and on your way. At Red Circle, you can pay for the whole year at once, 12 months for the price of 11, and you get your podcast delivered to any platform almost that you want. So you can still pay month to month if you like there. And if you have to cancel at any time, cancel at any time. If you're monthly. If you're for the year. Suckers, I got you. Wait, did I just say the out loud part? That was supposed to be the in my head part. Rate and review as always to please our algorithmic gods. Have a great Monday, folks, and we will see you tomorrow.